Good morning. Welcome to the September 13th, 2017 Safety Officer Teleconference. Thank you for joining the call. I just want to point out to everyone this call is being recorded to be available for playback later as a podcast. My name is Walter Krajalis, President of Aeronomics. I'm your host and discussion moderator. I am an ISBAO auditor and aviation consultant and attorney, and I'm proud to host these teleconferences as a means for safety officers to get together to compare notes and hear ideas dealing with issues related to aviation safety and safety management system. Our sponsor for these calls is Allianz Aviation Insurance. I want to thank them for their support and all of their efforts in enhancing aviation safety. And it's with them I'm excited to share a special announcement with all of the listeners of the Safety Officer Call. So together with Allianz, I want to invite all of you, if you happen to be attending the NBAA trade show and convention in Las Vegas, to join me on Monday night, October 9th, starting at 5:30 for a live in-person hosting of the Safety Officer Call. It will be held at the House of Blues Foundation Room, and come join us, be a part of the recording of the call, and stay afterwards for food and drink and meet the folks at Allianz. And if you wish to meet me, I'll be there, of course. So we'll have more information. In fact, we're posting it on the Aeronomics website as we speak, but it is simply as simple as just send me your email address for an invite confirmation. So happy this is going to be happening. To start the call, first let's quickly go over some ground rules for everyone on the call, especially if you're on the call for the first time. We keep it to 30 minutes. Again, it's being recorded as a podcast. Please use your mute button to cut down on background noise. And if you wish to speak, remember to unmute yourself, but it's only necessary to use first names. Full names and company names are not necessary. A little anonymity helps open the discussion. So our call, last call was 3 weeks ago, the way the calendar falls, and we did discuss how to conduct safety culture surveys and how to use that feedback once it's received. It was good discussion. That podcast will be posted here shortly. Did anybody have any comments on that about safety surveys? Or not hearing anyone on that. So I'd like to take a moment as a regular feature to briefly discuss any aviation accidents or incidents pertinent to business aviation since our last call. Fortunately, there hadn't been, but there was related to that Air Canada close call go around to the taxiway in San Francisco. The FAA did issue a SAFO letter. It's SAFO letter 17010. It dated on August 18th. It's an interesting read. It simply stated this is probably the most extreme example of not being engaged as far as incorrect surface approaches and landing. So does anybody have an additional comment on that? Or it's still pretty remarkable that it happened. Okay, not hearing anyone. Again, this call is for you guys. If there's any topics that you want to bring up that any one of you is dealing with or have a question about, let's open it up and go ahead and unmute yourself. And whoever has a question or comment, go ahead and speak up. Anybody? Anybody with an issue?
Walter, question on the San Francisco event.
Yes.
So I've seen a lot of commenting in various media sources about the crew may not have been using instrument navigation on the approach. But what I haven't seen yet is, were they using a HUD? I just was curious if anybody had heard whether they were actually looking through a HUD.
Good question. I personally haven't read anything about that. Has anybody got info on that?
And do we know who was actually flying in right seat or left seat?
From what I read, it was, let's see here. So there was an interview, or there was an article on AIN, and it said, what was remarkable, I mean, it was NOTAMed, it was on the ATIS, that the runway was closed, the left side runway's lights were off, however, there was a lighted X on the closed runway. I do not see where they said who was pilot flying.
Walter, this is Bob. I don't think I've read that information either. I don't know anything about the A320, but I doubt it has dual HUDs. But in my gut, and that's all it is, tells me that this is really going to boil down to, because of all the things you've mentioned, the runway being closed and NOTAMed and the big X on the other on the closed runway, circadian low. It was 3 a.m. body clock time for those pilots. And I just think they weren't all there.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me, too. I didn't know it was midnight California time that they were coming in.
And they were coming in from Toronto, I believe. So
yeah,
3 a.m. on their body clocks.
Yeah. So when I read it was midnight California time, I thought the same thing quite sincerely. You know, how long of a day duty day did they have? And, you know, coming in at that time. So, yeah, I think we need to get more information. We have it in mind the next time anybody goes to the, you know, training and set it up in a sim as to what it looked like. You know, I'm just curious what that sight picture is. You know, putting aircraft. Now, mind you, if they had their, you know, most folks when they taxi, especially when you're lining up behind each other, once you come to a stop, you turn off your taxi light. And so all you have left is position lights and your flashing beacon. I mean, I've been caught by coming up close behind an aircraft because all you got is the white tail light, you know, in a very dark environment. So I can imagine those aircraft could have been next to invisible on the taxiway if they had all their taxi lights off. This article mentions that one of the United pilots put on their landing lights when they realized what was going on. So,
well, another interesting piece of this apparently was that the NTSB discovered that the airport surface detection radar, the ASDEX, apparently had a blind spot out there on short final. And so that did not set off an alarm. One more, you know, safety device that failed.
Yeah. You know, and there's not much difference, distance between a runway and a taxiway. You know, you wonder how accurate can it be. It should be, but the previous caller asking about the HUD, I think that's a good question. If they were running with a HUD, wouldn't have been an issue. Well, not only a HUD, but with EVS or EFVS. So, you know, would have been able to see those aircraft with a HUD with an EVS system. Another good reason to flip that thing down and actually use it.
Yeah, and I think fatigue is going to be a good point in this particular event. But I think it's fact of life. We're going to end up shooting approaches. We're going to be tired, and perhaps their ops manual allows them to accept a visual approach for expediency. I don't know. If you put these guards in places, you say, well, look, we take a self-assessment here real quick on this approach. Maybe since we are tired, we're on the backside of our clock, maybe we ought to just do an instrument approach. But conversely, if you're going to continue to use visual approaches, I think a HUD is probably a good tool. And if you've only got it on the left side, then guess what? The guy in the left seat gets to shoot the approach, even though it may not be his leg. But I just worry that in the course of the investigation and the facts that are coming out, these types of things might get missed. And I hope they're not, as the NTSB issues more and more information about this, so that the rest of us can learn from it and maybe put some risk mitigations in place to combat what we all know is fact of life fatigue and maybe a very confusing ground environment lighting-wise for these guys. So I give them the benefit of the doubt, but good heads-up move by the crew to flip on landing lights and jump on a radio to say that these guys were not lined up appropriately rather than being heads down buried in a checklist or something.
Exactly. Exactly. Glad they spoke up. You see something, say something. you know, I've been called out. You know, you're sitting there on a taxiway. You're looking at somebody coming in with a crosswind. They're pointed right at you, but you know they're just crabbing. You know, but you're sitting there scratching your head sometimes. Anyhow.
Yeah, Walter, this is Sergio. That was my next question. I was going to ask, was there any crosswind at the time? Because a lot of times we see that often when we're holding short, waiting for the next aircraft to land at night. It looks like they're coming right at you, and you won't see anything. You know, you obviously got to take that into consideration, whether or not there's a crosswind and they're crabbing and their lights are pointing right at you. So I was just going to ask, I don't know what the weather conditions were at that night. And a lot of times, you get quite a bit of wind out there. So, any word on the weather?
You know, as soon as I opened my mouth, I started looking through the article here. I don't know what the wind was reported at the time.
Well, Walter, this is Bob again. It was a VFR, I believe, clear night. Typically, you know, the wind is out of the west. They're landing at 2-8. However, the visual approach, because the runways are closely separated parallel runways, there's only 750 feet between the runway center lines at San Francisco. And these guys were shooting a visual approach to the right runway, presumably. The visual approach that they were on is not a straight in. It is not on the localizer. It comes in at an angle of some, you know, 10 degrees or something. It's a charted visual approach. And that certainly, you know, contributed to the pilots on the taxiways, for example, you know, not seeing anything unusual to begin with. It was only when the guy got in really close and it was like, he's not lined up with the runway. But if you take a look at you know, San Francisco place on the visual approaches. You know, this is pretty easy to see that it, you know, they missed a lot of clues, but they were not coming in. They weren't lined up with the runway miles out like you'd expect if they were just doing a straight into most other airports.
Yeah, good point. We've got somebody who seems to be moving around or whatever with their phone. If you could mute it, that'd be great. Thanks. Good points, Bob. I mean, I always, you know, we can try to, I always take a point to, we can analyze, kind of really try to, you know, obviously we're trying to find the root cause, but, you know, until we get some more information, you know, the takeaway from it is, you know, beware of that at SFO, but, you know, that's, you know, but let's back up and look at more of the macro view and, you know, think of the nighttime, end of, you know, long duty days, circadian lows approaches, and just, you know, dial in the approach. Use your HUD with EVS. You know, you can always clear it away with the clear switch right away. If it's, you know, once you've got the run, you know, if it's distracting you. I mean, the first commenter, I think that's an excellent point, is if you had HUD EVS, it wouldn't have come up. So, I know everybody doesn't have that, but just another reason to use it, definitely. Anybody else? Good comments. I mean, we got time for handling another issue. Does anybody have something they're working on, scratching their head about? Go ahead and start us off.
Hi, Walter. It's Carl.
Hey, Carl.
Question I have for the group and advice I need. If you're heading downtown here in the next week or two to go over with our admins our emergency response plan. So I'm looking for advice. We've done this in the past before I was here, and it went okay, not as well as we thought. So I'm looking for advice on how to get engage the people downtown to look at our ERP and help us by participating in the ERP. So I'm just looking for advice if anybody's maybe done this recently and anything they can help me with before I head downtown.
All right, Carl. Good question. Just to clarify, if I may, you're talking about just having them even engage to even look at it or participate. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, more or less introductions. We have a lot of new people there, and to ultimately, what I need to do is a tabletop, and then ultimately a full emergency response plan. But at this point, it's just to get them to engage with us and talk with us and understand what we do in an emergency response plan and integrate with what the company does and try to get them to integrate. But for right now, it's literally just to introduce our emergency response plan to the new people and then ultimately engage it with the company's overall ERP plan, if that makes sense.
Right. Okay. Anybody want to comment on Carl's issue? Anybody? I'll get it started. You know, there's I think a tendency in just in people in general to, they don't want to talk about bad things. You know, they want to avoid it. So you know, I'm just shooting from the hip here. I think there's a tendency to keep your head in the sand about some of these issues. But I think because it's awkward. There's an awkwardness to it also. I find whenever there's an awkward or something that has to be done, the more you present it as it's routine. Hey, this is what we do. We regularly do drills. We want you to be in the know. We know it's a low, we hope that we never have to use it, but, you know, this is what we do, and we want you to go through with it and participate. Obviously, I would recommend cutting it down to, you know, instead of them reading the whole ERP, is just focus on, you know, that particular admin. What is their part in it, and what do they have to do? What's their role? And, you know, then if they show interest as to, well, what happens after I give that information, you know, just give them the additional information as they ask for it. That's my take on it. Anybody else? How many have run an ERP with? Now, that actually, you bring up an interesting thing, Carl, when you first mentioned it is, you know, most ERP drills that I hear that are being done are mostly just done in-house in the flight department. Maybe there's one person or so with the folks downtown, so to speak, the headquarters, that are a part of it. I commend you to be including those folks, definitely. That's great. Has anybody run a drill where they engage the folks at the corporate headquarters?
Hey, this is Craig. We've done that a time or two before. One of the accounts that we have, the company has their own emergency plans for their facilities and for any kind of, you know, natural disasters. And so this is just one other element that they love to drill on. Their insurance companies love the response back to know that, things are methodically being planned and taken to the highest considerations. Of course, the best time to do a drill is when there's not an actual event, so that everybody knows what to expect when that happens. And we've had great success with partnering with the corporate security and safety folks on their side. And it opens up a lot of discussions. Of course, an after-action review will look at lessons learned. And then, of course, you can put that into your own, you know, corporate safety risk profile for when you have any audits, such as maybe an ISBEO or Argus or Wyvern view of your documents. So,
no sense. Right. Thank you, Craig. And I would just throw in that, you know, if you're going to use, you know, some sort of accident on the airfield type scenario, that why not include the airport authority and crash fire rescue folks? Again, at a tabletop, it's just phone calls. I mean, I know there are some folks that do the full-blown mock-up, which is great and, you know, usually results in a lot of lessons learned. But short of that, you can still, you know, alert them that you're going to have this drill and would they like to be a part of it and at what level. Anybody else?
Hey, Walter, this is Don.
Yeah, Don.
We fortunately have an accountable executive who is very, very much committed to our emergency plan and safety management system anyway. But maybe the first question is to sit down with your accountable executive and ask them, how do you want this company to behave if? What are the priorities that you want this company to do, and how do you want us to do them? And then transmit that downhill as policy from the accountable executive. and I'm not sure that's on target to the question, but you might want to look at.
Well, you bring up a good point, Don, and that is, you know, if your accountable executive is, you know, pretty high up in the corporation, if you do have the CEO as the accountable executive, you know, they can just send out an email saying, you know, we believe in these drills, we want your participation. You know, that's a motivator. I totally agree. Which, by the way, I have three or four mock drill scenarios. I'd be happy to email to anybody if you ping me. I can send them to you. You know, there's, if you want to, you know, there's a certain structure you should have with a drill where you have someone who is the director of the drill, who's not a part of the response. And as things progress, they make the appropriate responses or state whatever the facts are when people make the query. You know, it's somewhat of a mini play, you know, where somebody on the outside is the one feeding the lines. So be happy to do that. Any other comments, questions on that? I think, and if it's not mentioned about how often a drill should be conducted under ISBA, it just says regularly. But, you know, industry practice, I think, is at least annually as far as a scenario-based drill. I think, though, on a more regular basis, one should look at the contacts list and emails and phone numbers. That needs to be regularly updated. If you have that as a part of what's included in your ERP. Very good. Anyone, another comment, or we're coming up on our time here.
Walter, Tom, one plug, please.
Yeah, sure, please.
We've got NBAA base coming up in October. I just wanted to put a plug in for the single pilot safety stand down to be held Monday, the 9th of August from 9 to 1, and the National Safety Forum from 8:30 to 1 on Thursday, the 12th of August. So if folks are considering stand for the last day of the convention, that's a worthy event to attend. We've got three panels planned, one on fitness for duty, one on ground handling incidents, and the third on high altitude wake turbulence decision making and loss of control. Member Wehner is currently booked to speak to us, and we'll be presenting the 2017 Dr. Tony Kern Professionalism Award. So I think it's going to be a good event for those that might consider attending.
Great. Thank you for that, Tom. Yeah, it's I've been able to get to both of those in the past, and they're definitely well worth the time. Good. Well, I'll throw in another plug too. Again, to remind folks, if you're in Las Vegas for the trade show, again Monday night, you know, we're going to have with Allianz at 5:30 on October 9th at the House of Blues. There's more information now. It's up posted on our website at aeronomics.com. We're going to do a live in-person safety officer conference call. Obviously, 5:30 Western time on a Monday is not our normal time. It's a special Monday night edition of the safety call. And I'm going to have the folks in underwriter and claims folks from Allianz to discuss their perspective and approach on safety and risk mitigation. So please join us and then and join the party afterwards too. That's the whole point, is let's meet each other and network. So any last parting comments?
Hi, Walter. It's Bob. One thing I wanted to just make everybody aware of, I think it's a great learning tool. In the latest issue of Business and Commercial Aviation, colloquially known as BCA, there's a really good article by James Albright related to the Learjet crash at Teterboro and circling. If ever, anybody hasn't seen it and read it, I've circulated it in our flight department for folks to read, and just want to recommend it to everybody else.
That's an excellent article.
Very good. Hey, I just learned something. I just did recurrent, and there's that TERPS change 21, is it? That I wasn't aware of it. You know, those approach charts that have that black diamond C in the circling minimums, is you have that increased protected airspace, and it's only for specific airports. Wasn't even aware of that. So something to look into. I know there's plenty of folks that discourage circling. Maybe we'll get into we'll get that article, get permission to repost that on the Aeronomics website. So, great. Well, thanks for that. I see it's 12 noon, time to wrap up the call. Thank you for all of you for joining the call, and especially those who shared your comments. To the question at the beginning, yes, if you send me an email as to the phone number that you're calling from, I have the ability that I get a report at the end of the call as to phone numbers and who is on the, that's it, as to who is on the call. And I can match up phone numbers and issue a certificate of continuing training as for safety officers. So I'm happy to do that. So we'll post that on our website too. So, again, I want to thank Allianz for their sponsorship. Join us at NBAA. Our next regular scheduled call is in 2 weeks, September 27th. Keep your comments and questions coming in. So signing off, you know me, it's identify hazards, mitigate risks. That's what it's all about. Thank you. Talk to you again in 2 weeks.
Bye. Thanks, Walter.
Thank you.
Thank you, Walter.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Thank you.